A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants us to step back and lay out what normal sleep architecture actually looks like in an adult. Not the things that disrupt it, not the drugs that alter it, just the basic blueprint. What is a sleep cycle? What are the phases called? Are there real subphases, or is the standard list basically solid? And how does that architecture shift naturally as we age?
This is the kind of question I love. Everyone talks about sleep hacks and sleep disruptors, but hardly anyone can describe what a normal night of sleep actually is. It's like studying potholes without knowing what a smooth road looks like.
Which, given how many potholes there are, might be the rational approach.
But let's build the road first. So here's the core structure. A healthy adult sleeper cycles through four distinct stages, and I want to be precise here, because the naming conventions have changed over the years. The current standard from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine recognizes three non-REM stages and one REM stage, N1, N2, N3, and REM.
Three non-REM stages. I remember when it was four.
And that's one of those things where the science updated but popular culture didn't get the memo. Before 2007, we split slow-wave sleep into stage 3 and stage 4. The AASM merged them into a single N3 stage because the distinction wasn't clinically meaningful enough to justify the split. So the modern framework is N1, N2, N3, REM. Four stages total.
Anyone still talking about stage 4 sleep is running on the old manual.
Running on outdated firmware, yes. And here's the thing, the older literature uses different terminology entirely. Before the 1960s, researchers talked about emergent stage 1 for REM because they had no idea what to call it. Nathaniel Kleitman and Eugene Asarinsky discovered REM in 1953. Asarinsky was actually a graduate student at the time. He noticed these rapid eye movements while watching his own son sleep.
The origin story of REM involves a grad student staring at his kid.
It's so wonderfully low-tech. Asarinsky hooked his 8-year-old son Armand up to a clunky electroencephalograph, an EEG, and saw these weird eye movement patterns. Kleitman, his advisor, was skeptical and made him replicate it on adults. They published a landmark paper in 1953 in Science, regularly occurring periods of eye motility and concomitant phenomena during sleep.
Before 1953, the entire scientific understanding of sleep was incomplete by a full quarter of the cycle.
And the paradigm shift was enormous. Before REM was discovered, sleep was considered a passive, unitary state. You close your eyes, brain activity dropped, that was it. The discovery that the brain is highly active during certain periods, sometimes more active than when awake, completely upended that.
Which brings us to the cycle itself. Walk me through a full one.
A single sleep cycle lasts about 90 minutes, give or take, typically between 70 and 110 minutes. Over the course of a normal night, an adult goes through 4 to 6 full cycles. Each cycle follows a predictable arc, though the composition changes as the night progresses.
The first cycle of the night doesn't look like the last one.
That's the key point, and we'll get there. But let me walk through the sequence. When you first fall asleep, you enter N1. This is the lightest stage of sleep, the transition between wakefulness and sleep. It lasts maybe 1 to 5 minutes, accounts for about 5% of total sleep time. If someone wakes you during N1, you'll probably say you weren't even asleep yet.
The I was just resting my eyes phase.
Your muscle tone relaxes, your breathing slows, your eye movements become slow and rolling. On an EEG, you see theta waves, 4 to 7 hertz, replacing the alpha waves of relaxed wakefulness. Occasionally, you get these little bursts called vertex sharp waves.
Then you drop into N2.
N2 is the workhorse. It accounts for roughly 45 to 55% of total sleep time in a healthy adult. It's still considered light sleep, but it's deeper than N1. Your heart rate slows further, your body temperature drops, and you become less responsive to external stimuli.
45 to 55%. So nearly half the night is spent in this one stage.
It's not just filler. N2 is where a lot of memory consolidation happens, particularly procedural memory and motor learning, but the signature features on an EEG are what make it fascinating. You see two distinctive waveforms, sleep spindles and K-complexes.
Those are the bursts of rapid activity?
Short bursts of 11 to 16 hertz activity, lasting maybe half a second to 2 seconds. They're generated by the thalamus, and they're thought to reflect the brain actively blocking sensory input to protect sleep stability. The other waveform, the K-complex, is a large, slow wave with a sharp negative component followed by a positive one. It's the brain's way of monitoring the environment without fully waking up. If you hear a soft sound or an N2, your brain might generate a K-complex in response. It's checking whether the stimulus is relevant.
The brain's version of a security guard peeking through the blinds and going back to his chair.
That's a better analogy than most textbooks give. And here's what's wild. Sleep spindles are correlated with IQ and cognitive performance. People with higher spindle density tend to perform better on learning and memory tasks. There's a whole line of research on spindle activity as a biomarker for cognitive resilience.
Spindles are the humble brag of sleep architecture.
Now, after N2 comes N3. This is slow wave sleep, also called deep sleep or delta sleep. On the EEG, you see high amplitude, low frequency delta waves, half a hertz to 2 hertz. To qualify as N3, at least 20% of a 30-second epoch must show these delta waves.
This is the stage where your heart is to wake.
If someone shakes you awake from N3, you'll experience sleep inertia, grogginess, disorientation, impaired cognitive performance that can last 30 minutes or more. N3 is the most restorative stage. Growth hormone is released, tissue repair happens, the glymphatic system clears metabolic waste from the brain.
The glymphatic system, this is the brain's cleanup crew.
Discovered formally in 2012 by Macon-Nettergaard's lab. During deep sleep, the space between brain cells increases by about 60%, allowing cerebrospinal fluid to flush through and clear out proteins like beta amyloid. It's one of the reasons poor sleep is linked to neurodegenerative disease. If you're not getting enough deep sleep, you're not taking out the trash.
N3 is brain janitorial services. How much of the night do we spend there?
In a young adult, about 20 to 25%. But, and this is the crucial bit, N3 is heavily front-loaded. The first 2 cycles of the night contain most of your deep sleep. By the 3rd and 4th cycles, N3 diminishes dramatically and may disappear entirely in later cycles.
Which means if you cut your sleep short by 2 hours, you're not losing a proportional slice of everything. You're disproportionately losing REM.
Because REM works the opposite way. REM episodes get progressively longer across the night. The first REM period might be only 5 to 10 minutes. The last one, in the early morning, can stretch to 30 to 60 minutes. So if you wake up at 5 a.m. instead of 7, you're sacrificing the richest REM portion of the night.
Which is the part of the night where you're processing emotions and consolidating memories, if I recall correctly.
Yes, and more. Let me describe REM. REM sleep is paradoxical. The EEG looks remarkably similar to wakefulness, with low amplitude, mixed frequency activity. Your eyes dart back and forth rapidly, but your body is essentially paralyzed. The brainstem actively inhibits motor neurons in the spinal cord, producing atonia. You can't move.
The brain is awake, but the body is locked down.
It's called REM atonia, and it's a protective mechanism. Without it, you'd physically act out your dreams. There's a sleep disorder called REM sleep behavior disorder where that atonia fails and people punch, kick, leap out of bed. It's dangerous, and it's often an early warning sign of Parkinson's disease or other synucleinopathies.
The paralysis is a feature, not a bug, and losing it is a red flag for neurodegeneration.
Now, REM accounts for about 20 to 25% of total sleep in a young adult. During REM, your breathing becomes irregular, your heart rate and blood pressure fluctuate, and your thermoregulation basically stops working. You don't sweat or shiver properly during REM. That's one reason ambient temperature matters so much for sleep quality.
The body becomes cold-blooded for a portion of the night.
And then there's the neurochemistry. During REM, the brain's aminergic systems, serotonin, norepinephrine, are nearly silent, but acetylcholine is through the roof. It's a completely different chemical environment from NREM sleep, which is why we think REM and NREM serve different functions.
We've got 4 stages. N1, the doorway. N2, the security checkpoint with spindles and K-complexes. N3, the deep cleaning crew. And REM, the paralyzed theater of the mind.
That's the architecture. And a typical night goes N1, N2, N3, back up to N2 briefly, then REM. That's one cycle. Then you repeat, but with less N3 and more REM each time. By the final cycle, you might go straight from N2 into REM with no deep sleep at all.
The architecture isn't a single blueprint. It's more like a building that remodels itself while you're inside it.
And the remodeling follows a predictable pattern that shifts with age, which gets to the second part of the prompt.
Before we get to aging, I want to push on something. The prompt asks whether there are subphases beyond this four-stage model, or whether this list is robust. You mentioned the old stage 3 and stage 4 merging into N3. Are there finer subdivisions that researchers still use?
Within the standard AASM framework, N3 is a single stage. But in research settings, some investigators still distinguish between stage 3 and stage 4 based on the percentage of delta waves. Stage 3 has 20 to 50% delta activity per epoch. Stage 4 has over 50%. And there's a physiological difference. Stage 4 produces more growth hormone release than stage 3.
The old distinction wasn't meaningless. It just wasn't necessary for clinical sleep medicine.
For diagnosing sleep apnea or insomnia, N3 versus N4 doesn't change your treatment plan. But for understanding endocrine function, the finer grain matters. There's also a concept called cyclic alternating pattern, CAP, which subdivides NREM sleep into periods of stability and periods of arousal instability. CAP rate is a measure of sleep fragmentation that doesn't show up in standard sleep staging.
The standard four-stage model is a clinical consensus, not the full picture. It's the practical schema.
And then there's the transition states. The period between wake and N1 is sometimes called sleep onset. The transition out of sleep is sleep offset. These aren't formal stages, but they have distinct EEG signatures and behavioral characteristics. Sleep onset, in particular, is fascinating. You get these slow rolling eye movements and sometimes hypnagogic imagery, those brief dreamlike fragments before you're fully asleep.
The moment where you think of a perfect reply to an argument from 3 days ago and then immediately forget it.
That's the one. Hypnagogic hallucinations are normal, by the way, not a sign of pathology. About 70% of people experience them occasionally. They're distinct from hypnopompic hallucinations, which occur during the transition from sleep to wakefulness.
Hypnagogic going down, hypnopompic coming up.
They're both normal in isolation. It's when they're frequent and distressing that they might indicate narcolepsy.
The four-stage model is robust for clinical purposes, but the reality is messier. Transitional states, microarchitecture like CAP, and research-grade subdivisions all exist beneath the surface.
I think that's actually a good principle for understanding any biological classification. The categories are real, but the boundaries are fuzzy. Nature doesn't care about our bins.
Nature is the anti-librarian.
Deeply opposed to the Dewey Decimal System. All right, let's talk about aging. This is where the architecture really transforms.
I suspect the story is, everything gets worse.
It's more nuanced than that. Some things get worse, some things just shift. But the overall arc is a decline in sleep depth and continuity. Let me walk through the lifespan.
Start with young adulthood, 20s, early 30s.
That's the benchmark. A healthy 25-year-old spends about 20 to 25% of the night in deep sleep, 20 to 25% in REM, about 50% in N2, and maybe 5% in N1. They cycle smoothly with few awakenings. Sleep efficiency. The percentage of time in bed actually spent asleep is above 90%. Starting in the mid-30s, deep sleep begins to decline. It's slow at first. By age 40, N3 might be down to 15 to 20%. By age 60, it's often below 10%. Some adults over 70 have almost no measurable deep sleep.
Almost no deep sleep. That's alarming.
It is, and it's one of the most robust findings in sleep medicine. A 2004 meta-analysis by Ohayon and colleagues published in Sleep looked at 65 studies and found that slow-wave sleep declines by about 2% per decade from young adulthood through age 60. After 60, the decline accelerates.
2% per decade. So by 70, you've lost roughly a decade's worth of deep sleep compared to someone at 30.
The consequences are real. Less growth hormone, less lymphatic clearance, more fragmented sleep. Older adults wake up more frequently. not necessarily conscious awakenings, but EEG arousals that disrupt the continuity of sleep stages. Sleep efficiency drops. A 70-year-old with 85% sleep efficiency is considered normal.
The architecture itself changes. You mentioned N3 disappears from later cycles. Does it disappear entirely in older adults?
In some, yes. And when it does appear, the delta waves themselves are lower in amplitude. It's not just less deep sleep. The deep sleep that remains is shallower. On an EEG, the slow waves of a 70-year-old are literally smaller than those of a 30-year-old. The amplitude of delta activity decreases by roughly 50% across the adult lifespan.
That's a dramatic structural change. What about REM?
REM is more resilient. Total REM percentage stays relatively stable across adulthood. It might dip slightly in very old age, but it's not the dramatic decline we see with N3. What does change is REM latency, the time from sleep onset to the first REM period. In young adults, REM latency is about 90 minutes. In older adults, it shortens.
Older adults enter REM faster.
And shorter REM latency is associated with depression, by the way, which complicates the picture. Is it aging, or is it the higher prevalence of subclinical depression in older populations? The research is still sorting that out.
The REM itself, the quality, the density of eye movements, does that change?
REM density, the number of rapid eye movements per unit of REM sleep, actually remains fairly stable, or may even increase slightly in healthy aging. But the atonia gets patchier. Older adults have more muscle twitches during REM, more REM without atonia. It's not necessarily pathological, but it's on a spectrum with REM sleep behavior disorder.
The paralysis system gets leaky with age.
Like a lot of inhibitory systems in the brain. Now, the other big change is in N2. As deep sleep declines, N2 expands to fill the gap. An older adult might spend 60% or more of total sleep time in N2. And the sleep spindles themselves change. They become fewer, shorter, and lower in amplitude.
The spindles degrade.
Which is concerning given the link between spindle activity and cognitive function. There's active research on whether spindle decline predicts cognitive decline. Some studies suggest it does. Reduced spindle density in older adults correlates with poorer memory consolidation and executive function.
The architecture doesn't just shrink, it reshapes. Deep sleep collapses, N2 expands, REM holds on but gets structurally weirder, and the whole thing becomes more fragmented.
The fragmentation is key. Older adults don't just get less deep sleep, they wake up more. The number of arousals per hour of sleep, the arousal index, increases with age. Some of these are respiratory. Even subclinical sleep-disordered breathing becomes more common. Some are due to nocturia, getting up to urinate. Some are spontaneous. The net effect is that sleep becomes less restorative even if total sleep time is preserved.
Which raises an interesting question. Is the decline in sleep quality a cause of aging-related cognitive decline, or merely a symptom of it?
The million-dollar question. The evidence suggests it's bidirectional. Poor sleep accelerates brain aging, and brain aging degrades sleep. The glymphatic system is a perfect example. Less deep sleep means less clearance of beta amyloid and tau, which accumulate and damage the brain regions that generate deep sleep, which further reduces deep sleep. It's a vicious cycle.
A feedback loop of neurodegeneration.
And there's a specific brain region implicated, the medial prefrontal cortex. It's one of the primary generators of slow wave activity, and it's also one of the regions most vulnerable to age-related atrophy. As the medial prefrontal cortex thins, slow waves weaken, and the cycle accelerates.
The very structure that produces deep sleep is one of the first to go.
Which might explain why deep sleep is so vulnerable to aging. It's not a random target, it's ground zero for the aging brain.
Does the circadian system also degrade?
And that's a huge part of the story. The suprachiasmatic nucleus, the master clock in the hypothalamus, loses neurons with age. The amplitude of circadian rhythms flattens. Melatonin production declines. Older adults tend to have an advanced sleep phase. They get sleepy earlier in the evening and wake up earlier in the morning, sometimes pathologically early.
The classic grandparent who falls asleep at 7 p.m. and is wide awake at 4 a.m.
And it's not just a preference. It's a biological shift driven by circadian changes and reduced light exposure. The lens of the eye yellows with age, filtering out blue light, which is the primary signal for circadian entrainment. Less blue light reaches the retina. The suprachiasmatic nucleus gets a weaker signal, and the clock drifts.
The eye itself becomes a worse timekeeper.
Physically filters out the Zeitgeber. There's actually research on cataract surgery improving sleep. When you remove the yellowed lens and replace it with a clear artificial one, blue light transmission is restored, and sleep quality often improves.
That's a remarkable connection. Ophthalmology as sleep medicine.
It's one of those cross-disciplinary insights that makes you realize how interconnected these systems are. Now, there's one more age-related change worth mentioning. Sleep architecture becomes less sexually dimorphic with age. In young adults, women tend to have more deep sleep and better preserved slow-wave activity than men of the same age. They also have higher spindle density. But after menopause, that advantage largely disappears. Estrogen is neuroprotective and seems to support slow-wave sleep generation. When estrogen drops, deep sleep drops with it.
The hormonal environment shapes the architecture.
And it's not just estrogen. Growth hormone, cortisol, thyroid hormones, they all modulate sleep architecture. Aging changes all of these axes simultaneously. It's hard to disentangle what's pure aging from what's hormonal aging.
Which makes the whole picture messier, but also more accurate.
And I should mention, not everything about sleep worsens with age. Some aspects are stable. Total sleep time, if you allow for the increased fragmentation, doesn't change dramatically in healthy aging. The ability to nap remains intact. And some older adults maintain excellent sleep architecture well into their 80s and 90s. These superagers are a focus of active research.
The exception that proves the rule, or the exception that points to what's possible.
If we can understand why some people preserve deep sleep into old age, we might be able to intervene for everyone else.
To summarize the lifespan arc, deep sleep peaks in young adulthood, declines steadily, and may nearly vanish in old age. REM holds on, but gets structurally odd. Shorter latency, patchy atonia. N2 expands to compensate. Circadian rhythms flatten and advance. Sleep becomes lighter, more fragmented, less restorative.
That's the story. And I want to emphasize that this is normal aging, not pathological. These changes happen in healthy older adults without sleep disorders. It's part of the biology of aging, like graying hair or declining muscle mass.
Which reframes how we think about sleep medicine for older adults. If deep sleep normally declines, then treating an older adult's sleep complaint isn't about restoring a 25-year-old's architecture. It's about optimizing what's biologically plausible.
That's a crucial clinical point. A 70-year-old who complains of light sleep and early awakenings might not have a disorder. They might have age-normal sleep. The goal is to distinguish pathological changes from expected ones, and to treat what's treatable without over-medicalizing normal aging.
The line between pathology and normal variance gets blurrier with age.
In every domain, not just sleep. But sleep is particularly tricky because the changes are so pronounced and so subjectively distressing. No one likes waking up at 4 a.m.
I wouldn't know. I'm a sloth. Waking up at any hour is an imposition.
You do have a unique perspective on sleep architecture.
My sleep architecture is less an architecture and more of a blanket fort.
Yet here you are, fully conscious, doing a podcast.
Don't remind me. I'm due for a nap.
Before you drift into N1 on air, let me add one thing about the implications of all this. There's a growing movement in sleep medicine to develop interventions that specifically target slow-wave sleep enhancement. Acoustic stimulation. Playing soft tones in phase with slow waves has been shown to boost delta activity in older adults. There's a 2017 study from Phyllis's lab at Northwestern showing that pink noise played during deep sleep improved memory in older adults.
We've covered the color spectrum of sleep sounds before, but the idea that you can acoustically reinforce deep sleep is wild. It's like adding a subwoofer to your brain's delta waves.
It works precisely because the brain can entrain to rhythmic stimuli. The slow waves have a natural frequency, around 1 Hz. If you deliver auditory pulses locked to that rhythm, you can amplify the waves. It's like pushing a swing at the resonant frequency.
The brain is a pendulum, and you're giving it a nudge exactly when it needs it.
The technology is getting better. There are now consumer devices, headbands, bedside units, that do real-time EEG monitoring and deliver phase-lock stimulation. The FDA has cleared some of these for home use.
Are they effective, or is this the sleek tech equivalent of a juicer gathering dust on the counter?
The evidence is mixed. Lab studies show clear effects, Real-world effectiveness is less certain, partly because adherence is poor. People stop using them. But the principle is sound. Slow-wave enhancement is one of the most promising frontiers in sleep medicine.
Which brings us back to Daniel's prompt, in a way. Understanding normal architecture isn't just academic. It's the foundation for all these interventions. You can't fix what you can't describe.
And the description itself reveals where the leverage points are. Deep sleep is front-loaded, so protect the first half of the night. REM is back-loaded, so don't cut sleep short. N2 is the scaffolding that holds the cycles together. N1 is the gatekeeper. The whole system has a logic.
A logic that degrades gracefully, or not so gracefully, across the lifespan.
A logic we're only beginning to understand well enough to intervene on.
That's a good place to land. One thing I'm still wondering about. We've talked about the stages as discrete bins, but the transitions between them, the microarchitecture, the cyclic alternating pattern you mentioned. How much of what matters for sleep quality happens in the seams rather than the stages themselves?
That's the frontier. CAP analysis, microarousal scoring, spectral analysis of the EEG, these are tools that go beyond the four-stage model. The field is moving toward a more continuous, dynamic view of sleep. The stages are useful, but they're a coarse graining of something much more complex.
The map is not the territory.
But it's a pretty good map, and it's gotten us further than most people realize.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The Lubeck Law Code of 1243 mandated that Hanseatic merchants trading in the Vanuatu Archipelago, a claim that appears in exactly one disputed marginal note in the Stralsund archives, must accept payment in dried sea cucumber if the trading partner lacked silver coin. The sea cucumber exchange rate was fixed at 17 per Lubeck mark, making it the world's first legally codified echinoderm currency peg.
Right.
I have so many questions, and I'm not sure I want answers to any of them. This has been my Weird Props. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flemingtop for keeping the show running and to everyone listening. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps.
I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry.
Back to my blanket fort.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.